Thank you, Rob. Then my lectures will be about entanglement entropy in quantum field theory. More generally, I would like to say that what I will talk about is the entropy in a region of a space. Let us take some region V of the space and ask what is the entropy inside this region. This can be, for example, can have some thermal entropy and also will contain some entropy due to vacuum fluctuations. So in general, will not be an entanglement entropy. For example, if the full state is non-pure. But in this area, we always call it entanglement entropy. the first thing that I want to discuss is what is the motivation? What is why do we want to really compute this thing, right? Because it's kind of different to other things that we compute in quantum field theory, for example, correlators or cross sections. These are directly related to the experiment. While the entropy itself is not an observable. The entropy is not an observable. Of course, it's related. It can be constrained, it can be approached with measurements, but it's not an observable in a strict sense in quantum mechanics. So it's a kind of really purely theoretical quantity in this sense. When I first started working on this, 10 years ago or more, one of the toughest part in writing a paper was the motivation, was the introduction. Today, you can just compute some entanglement entropy and publish it, and I compute some entanglement entropy, right? Still, this is a kind of sociological thing, but still, we would like to, can I see the first slide? Sorry, can we see the first slide? Oh, thank you. So the motivation comes from the relations it has to many different areas in physics, especially that they are being discussed these days. The first thing was the entanglement entropy, the black hole entropy, this Bekenstein-Hawking formula. And it was proposed by Rafael Sorkin and other people that maybe an interpretation of the statistical meaning of this black hole entropy was entanglement entropy across the horizon of the black hole. Still, this question, I think, is not completely solved today, and it's a very important question if it can be interpreted as entanglement entropy. Some partial answer of this was given by holographic entanglement entropy. There is also in this subject the question of black hole information loss that is very important. I'm writing in green the main questions of these areas. Of course, this has relations to entanglement entropy in quantum field theory because there are fields across the horizon and this will have some entropy. Another thing that comes from black hole physics is these entropy bounds like Bekenstein bound, Busso bound, the generalized second law itself. And in order to understand these bounds, you need also entanglement entropy in quantum field theory to understand how it behaves. In fact, some proof of these three things have been given in the weak gravity limit, and is essential in this proof understanding the entropy in the quantum fields. Sorry. Okay. That was my computer. Thank you. Then there is this area of quantum information theory that is, of course, the generalization to quantum physics of classical information theory. And people have, studied entanglement theory, and there are these things in condensed matter that I call area laws that have been used to devise very interesting numerical methods to solve difficult problems in condensed matter. This DMRG, MIRA, tensor networks, also related to quantum entanglement entropy in quantum field theory is this holographic entanglement entropy that is a way to compute entanglement entropy in a quantum field theory that has a holographic dual and is an enrichment of the ADS CFT dictionary, and it computes the entanglement entropy that is a difficult calculation in quantum field theory in terms of some bulk differential equation, some minimal surface, and it opened up many interesting questions in gravity physics, like what is the meaning of localization in quantum gravity or the description of black hole interiors. And there is also this new subject that is trying to understand how is the process of out of equilibrium dynamics of fields, the process of thermalization, and this opens up some new area of physics that is somehow the dynamics of entanglement. That one can think of kind of a generalization of fine-grained Boltzmann equation, for example, something like that. And then there is the interest itself in the entanglement entropy in quantum field theory and condensed matter because of many things that have been understood in terms of entanglement entropy. For example, some C theorems that prove the irreversibility of the renormalization group flow. And then the identification of many phenomena in quantum field theory, like phase transitions, topological phases, anomalies, confinement in terms of entanglement entropy. And one can hope, this is a hope, to understand better some things, for example, a deeper meaning of the C theorems, or even farther than that, if there is a formulation of quantum field theory in terms of a statistical or quantum information theory tools. That this is a hope, and so this is quite a motivation for studying this entanglement entropy. Okay, so let us come back to the idea of computing some entropy in a region of a space. This looks like a very old question, and you can you know that in textbooks people compute the entropy on a thermal state, for example, in some volume, and it grows like the volume. But if you look at the textbook calculation, the way it's done is you put the system in the box, you put some boundary conditions, some periodic boundary conditions, for example, you have your Hamiltonian, you have then the thermal state corresponding to this Hamiltonian, you compute the eigenvalues, you compute the entropy. But of course, this depends on if you want to compute the volume term of the thermal entropy, it doesn't matter the boundary conditions because you can take the large volume limit, divide by volume, and it will disappear from the calculation. So the boundary conditions will give you some like area-dependent term that is neglected in this textbook calculation, let's say. But we don't want to do that because we don't want to take the large volume limit. We want to keep a finite volume. And we also don't want to have ambiguities in the sense of putting external elements just as a boundary conditions in order to compute the entropy of a region. So the natural way to do that is, as you know, is just first compute the density matrix, rho v, is the trace of the global density matrix over the complementary region V bar, and then compute the entropy. This does not have any external element. This does not, there is no input in boundary conditions external to the model itself. So we want to have something that depends on the model and nothing else. But of course, it will happen that it will contain some other ambiguities due to divergences. So the ambiguity will reappear in the form of divergences. One important thing that we have to understand here is that this rho b, even if I take it as a trace over the full density matrix, in fact only depends on the physics of b, in the sense that rho b, of course, is defined in such a way that the trace of any operator times rho b is the expectation value of this OB, this operator. So, and if I take all operators here, and I know all the expectation values, there is only a unique density matrix that does this job. So the density matrix is a complicated function of expectation values, but it belongs to the physics of the region B itself. Another point is that I'm interested here in quantum field theory. Quantum field theory will mean here also relativistic quantum field theory, and this is a quantum mechanics of a continuous system. So we will have a continuous number of degrees of freedom, say, but we want, in order to do this computation, we need to put a cutoff. So we will think the quantum field theory in terms of a theory that is regularized, for example, in the lattice, and then take the limit where the lattice separation goes to zero, for example. And then we will ask what elements of this entanglement entropy will belong to the model of the limit. So that there will be parts that will depend on the specific procedure that I use to go to the continuum limit, and parts that that are called universal that belong to the limit itself. It doesn't matter how you approach to this limit. So it's a way to define what is a quantum field theory. There are, it's like a limit of finite theories, and then you take only the elements that belong to this ideal object that is the quantum field theory of the continuum limit. So, well, but then how we compute this? How we compute this this entanglement entropy, this entropy of a region, let's say. Well, we have to compute the density matrix. So suppose you have a system of a lattice, for example, and you draw a region. Then you have endpoints inside. Suppose you have a qubit on each point. Then your Hilbert space will be 2 to the n dimensional, and the density matrix will be 2 to the n times 2 to the n. So you have 2 to the n eigenvalues, and it's very hard calculation in general. So people can do this for small systems, and there are some other methods like DMRG where you can go to the continuum limit or for some specific cases. But in general, it's a very hard calculation. So let me think of a calculation like this, like, let's say, brute force calculation. Let's compute the density matrix and the entropy with the eigenvalues, all that. But in the simplest case, as usual for a quantum field theory, the simplest case is the free case, where you have a quadratic Hamiltonian in terms of some field. So, and in this case, when you have a for example, the scalar field. So your Hamiltonian will be some integral over the space of the momentum variable square plus the gradient of the field square plus m square phi square, for example, if it has a mass. So it's quadratic in the canonical variables phi and pi. And in this case, you know there is a property that is called Wick's theorem that it tells that all correlation functions can be written in terms of two-point correlation functions. So it means that there is a very large simplification in this case. So, but let us think in a discretized model. So we have a set of operators, canonical commutation variables, phi i, phi j, that obey canonical commutation relations. And let us think we have general correlation functions. So phi I, phi j, we can write this as xij. This is a matrix. We have a finite number of these canonical commutation variables. And then also you have this pi I, pi j. Is another matrix. And you can also have the two-point correlation functions of momentum and field. That I'm writing like this. In general, you can have something else here. But this is, if your state is time symmetric invariant, this will be zero. And this is the case that I want to concentrate here. If you want to general formulas for this, for more general case, you can ask Marmesey that has these formulas in the pocket. But then this is the two-point functions. I'm saying that the state is Gaussian or is free, let's say. It means that all higher order correlation functions can be written in terms of these two-point correlation functions. For example, you have phi 1, phi 2, phi 3, phi 4. This will be all combinations of products of two-point functions. And you can also put momentums here, and you have the same formula, and you can put more operators, and you will always have the all possible products in the same order as the original order here of two-point correlation functions. So this means, as we have said, that the density matrix is given by the expectation values. It means that the density matrix can be fixed in this case by only these matrices X and P. This is the only information that you need. So the idea is how to get the density matrix or the eigenvalues that we need for computing the entropy in terms of the correlation function. And this is a paper by Peschel. This 2003. And the idea is very simple. The idea is that of course, you can do this in a different way. You can compute the full state, the vacuum state, for example, in this case, and then trace over the variables outside, and you get the same answer. But this is more general, and it focuses on the correlators inside. It doesn't have to have any information of the outside part. So the idea of Peschel was to have an ansatz for the density matrix, so that the density matrix will be some exponential of some sum of the canonical variables, let's say
phi I by J plus phi I. Sorry? Yeah, this is rho B. Rho B. So this matrix is also depend on the region. So in general, when I'm doing this, I'm forgetting about anything else that is not inside this region. So it can be anything. That the only condition that I'm putting is that satisfies with theorem. Why is this ansatz? It's because you can prove that if you have something like this, that is exponential of quadratic expression in terms of the canonical commutation variables, you will always have weak theorem. You will always be having a Gaussian state. So with doing this, you already have all the higher points correlation functions, and you only need to match the two-point correlation function coming from this formula to the two correlation function here. So in order to do that, one can think that this expression you can always like diagonalize. It's like in a Hamiltonian that you can always introduce creation and annihilation operators in such a way that the Hamiltonian can be written as a simple sum of a number of operators. So you can think that this will be equal to some expression like the product of some variables that you don't know yet of e to the minus some numbers, where this creation and annihilation operators will be given by some linear expressions in terms of the phi and the pi's that you have to compute. And you have here to put also a normalization constant such that the density matrix is normalized to have trace one. Here? Yeah, you can put a constant here to have a normalized trace. But then you have to find out what is the relation between. So the idea is that the expression of the density matrix is just, if you look at this, this is the expression of the thermal density matrix of a single harmonic oscillator. So you have many harmonic oscillators, each with different, let's say this is like some energy times beta for the harmonic oscillator thermalized. And then what you have to do is to introduce a Bobolyubov transformation that is just a linear transformation of variables. And say that that your fields and your momentum will be related linearly to the creation and annihilation operators. You don't know the coefficient up to this point. But then you can, when you have this, you can put this expression of the density matrix and do this. Trace of rho phi I phi j that we know is xij by definition. If you plug this expression in terms of creation and annihilation operators here and here, you will have some linear combinations of expectation values of the creation and annihilation operators. And given this simple formula for the density matrix, you can compute. It's just the expectation value of the number operator, for example, if you have A dagger A, in some thermal density matrix. So, and then you can compute this matrix, and this matrix will
this matrix X, right, without the indices, will be given by this alpha matrix here times some matrix that I will explain soon, alpha dagger, alpha transpose, where this N matrix is just expectation value. This N is a diagonal matrix, which has the expectation value of the number operator. That you can compute from here. And this is E to the AK minus 1 to the minus 1. So it's the expectation value of a bosonic a number operator in a thermal bath. So this matrix is diagonal, and you have this expression, and you can also have an analogous expression for the matrix P, just computing pi I, pi j here. And what you get is similar, but in terms of the matrix beta there. And then you have related now these betas and these epsilons with to the original correlators. In order to compute the entropy, the only thing that you need is these epsilons. You don't need these alphas and betas. And then you can use the following fact that if you write the commutation relation, phi I, by J, in terms of these linear combinations, and use the fact that A dagger K A J, let's say, is delta K J, then using this and this expression here, you can obtain easily that alpha and beta matrices cannot be independent, have to have this relation here. So alpha and beta are like inverse of each other. And that is good because then you can multiply this and this and eliminate the alpha and beta here. So what you obtain is that alpha times 1/4 of 2n plus 1 square alpha to the minus 1. So I'm multiplying these two and using these two and using that this cancels with this except for a factor 1/2 and that this is the inverse of this one. Multiplying these two, what I get is this relation is equal to xp, the product of these two matrices. But then, this is a similarity transformation. So the eigenvalues of this matrix here are giving you directly the eigenvalues of this diagonal matrix here. And you can read this N is related to the energies, let's say, of these modes that are decoupled. So you can obtain these modes, the energy of these modes, directly from the eigenvalues of xp. So if you write this other matrix that is just the square root of xp, and these have eigenvalues nu sub k, let's say, then you have a relation that is that this nu sub k is equal to 1/2 hyperbolic cotangent of ek over 2. So, and this is the relation you were looking for because this relates directly something that you can compute from the correlators to the energies of these decoupled modes. And then it's a simple exercise to compute the entropy of this matrix because it will be the sum of the entropies of each of the decoupled modes, will be the sum is just the entropy of a single harmonic oscillator thermalized. And if you write this sum in terms of the eigenvalues of this matrix C, that is the square root of xp, you get something that is trace of C plus 1/2. And this is the formula you were looking for. Just from the correlator matrices, you get the entropy. C is not, in general, Hermitian. X and P are Hermitians, but C is not. But in any case, you have because this alpha is alpha minus 1, no alpha dagger. So. But the relation of eigenvalues is there, right?
So it's still
yeah. So these numbers, yes, are real and positive. So you can do the square root. Well, you also see that you need, in order that the entropy is some real number, that this C has eigenvalues greater than 1/2. And this you can trace back to the fact that C square is XP, and this is like the uncertainty relation, that correlation of coordinates times correlation of momentum will be greater than 1/4. It's interesting because the Hilbert space here was infinite dimensional, right? Because it's harmonic oscillators. But then you have the entropy is just something that you can compute with n times n matrix instead of infinite dimension matrix. So this is very easy, and then you can put in the computer, you can put some model, and then you can take a close look at what is the entanglement entropy, for example, for some specific model. Yeah. No, these are A and A dagger, especially because you have this. I'm forgetting about the rest. I'm thinking now. You have n harmonic oscillators, let's say, coupled in such a way that the correlation functions obey Weak theorem, and then you want to compute the entropy. Forget about. You have other place, other space where you have traced it down, right?
A does not necessarily diagonalize.
No, no, it belongs to the. No. This was a motivation, and now I come back to this motivation, but this is just the entropy of a set of harmonic oscillators. Yeah, sure. Then if you want to use this, for example, for this model, you just want to compute the correlators in some region, the correlators in some region. But then you can now compute the correlator in the full space, just diagonalizing the Hamiltonian. And in general, what you have if you have a Hamiltonian that now I discretize and write like 1/2, something like this, because in discretizing this Hamiltonian, there will be like near neighbors. Products there, so you will have a matrix that is not diagonal here. Then it's a simple exercise to compute the correlation matrix ij, now in the full space, not reduced to b, and this is just k to the minus 1 ij, and for p you have an analogous formula that is 1/2 k, 1/2 ij. So given the Hamiltonian, you know the correlations, and for the vacuum state, for the fundamental state, so this is pure state, but now I reduce, because the correlators in some region will be the same as the correlator we obtain here, right? And of course, it will also satisfy weak theorem inside the region, because it satisfies weak theorem in the full space. So with this, I can take some matrices, and PBij that live in the region and compute C, the eigenvalues, and the entropy. And for example, for this case, suppose you have a two-dimensional model like this. So two spatial dimensions, then you can compute the correlation functions and will be something like this. So now you have two indices, one going in one direction of the lattice and the other direction of the lattice, and you have some correlators that, for example, this one reads like this. So it's is EJ here. So if you have these numbers that give you the position in the lattice, you compute this integral, I'll give you the correlator. So the tough part is computing numerically this integral, but you can put in the computer. It's not difficult if you don't want to have very large regions. And then you have the correlators, plug it in this formula, and get the result. This method can be used also for fermions, for Gaussian states for fermions, where you have also some weak theorem for fermions, for free fermions, so quadratic Hamiltonian for fermions, and also for Maxwell fields that are not coupled to charges. Sure. Yeah. This is for the vacuum state. This is for fundamental state. No. It's not a one point. I put an operator, general operator, so it can be 2 points, n points. Yeah. This O can mean a product of operator, right? Well, then you can do this in a computer. I encourage people that is interested in this subject to do these computations, and there are some problems that are proposed to do these numerical computations, because I think it's a lot of fun, at least from my point of view, and you will learn many things. I don't know, but let me see. I don't know exactly, but you because you say because it's C log C somehow, yeah. interesting question. So. Yeah, well, there are many like computations that you can do analytically. I will come back to this in later question. But you can do analytical some because analytical calculation in the continuum limit sometimes is you can do it while with this you have to take a limit, let's say. But sometimes it's difficult. If I draw some, let's say, two squares. How do you compute this analytically? I will come back to that. But it means it's some calculation that is tough. But here you can approach at least numerically the answer, right? So what happened? Ah, OK. So this is, for example, a two-dimensional calculation. Then you have this Hamiltonian, and then this is the discretized version. And you take, for example, this square in the lattice and compute the entropy. And then you are aiming, you have a number. Then you get a number, but you are aiming to the continuum limit. It means that you have to put more and more points to change your lattice and make it denser. Or otherwise, you can also, because in this case you don't have a mass, you can also think that you fix the lattice and take the square to be bigger and bigger and bigger. If you have a mass, you should have to rescale also the mass when you do this limit. But for this massless case, it's just taking the squares that are increasing. And if you do the computation, this is the result. You have an entropy that grows linearly with the size of the square. So it means that you can write it as something that grows with the perimeter. I'm putting here 4 because it's 4 sides, L over epsilon. Because I'm putting here L is the number of lattice points. So in the continuum, I would write it as L divided by epsilon, where epsilon is the cutoff, the lattice size. But if you take a closer look to this and, for example, do a fit of this data, you will see that it's not exactly linear. And there is a subleading term that you can, for example, you can do the fit here and subtract the linear term. And what you get is something like here. So it's a term that fits perfectly well with the logarithmic term here, with this coefficient. And then you have that. This logarithm grows also with the number of points in the side divided by epsilon. So both of these terms in the continuum limit are divergent. Because I could say, well, I take epsilon to 0, so these two terms are divergent pieces. and then you can also play the game of computing other things. So instead of a square, now, for example, you take some shape that is not a square, but is still with right angles. And you compute, and what you get is, again, the perimeter divided by epsilon by the times the same coefficient. But now the coefficient of the logarithmic term has changed by a factor of 6 over 4, or 3 over 2, but 6 over 4. And then you can understand that. Because this shape has six vertices instead of four, sorry. So it means that this logarithmic term is coming from the vertices. Somehow it's related to the vertices. And you can do other calculations, for example, triangles or different things, and you can realize that this logarithmic coefficient will always be like a sum over different vertices of your shape, but the coefficient depends on the angle. Here is the same coefficient because all angles are 90 degrees. But then you can also do the following, that is, because you are aiming to the continuum limit, it shouldn't matter if you compute the entropy of a square that is twisted or is rotated against the axis of the lattice. But when you do that, you get that the coefficient of the perimeter has changed, is different one, it's not anymore this one, while the coefficient of the logarithmic term is again the same. So this tells you something that that the area term is not something that belongs to the continuum theory. It's something that depends on the way you, for example, it doesn't have rotational symmetry of the state in the continuum limit. So your correlators of in the continuum limit will have rotational symmetry, while this quantity, the area term, will not. While the logarithmic term does not notice that there is a lattice, and you have a that this quantity is it does belong to the continuum limit. So there is a separation, let's say, of what you can get that is a universal quantity in the continuum limit and what is not. And you can think a little bit why is, for example, the logarithmic coefficient is coming with something that is summing over all vertices, and why there is an area term, let's say. Why these two things are somehow local on the boundary? These two things are local on the boundary. And the reason is very simple. Is the fact that entanglement, why that there is a divergence? There is a divergence because quantum field theory has modes with arbitrarily small wavelength, and these modes will induce entanglement across the boundary, but very near the boundary. So it senses only the nearby geometry in a point in the boundary. So this entanglement will be summed over all the boundary. So it's a local contribution on the boundary. And you expect that the divergent piece of the entropy is always local on the boundary. So if you want to write something that is local on the boundary, the first thing that you will write is some integral of some number that give you the area. And then you will write something, some other terms. And for this case, the only thing that you can write is something that depends on the vertices, because it's something new, different from these sides. And so it will be sum over the different vertices. So in general, then, we expect that the entanglement entropy of a region will have some expansion in terms of the cutoff of that regularize the theory that will look like this. Some expansion, for example, G to the D minus 1. Plus some G0, let's say this is coefficient of the logarithmic term. Plus some finite piece. In general, all these terms are what are called non-universal, because if you change the cutoff, for example, immediately the coefficient will change. While if you change the cutoff here, the logarithmic term will have the same coefficient. So the logarithmic term is universal, while the others are not. I have to say that this formula, in fact, can have more different. If you just starting the continuum, right? Well, the answer to that is that you will arrive to the conclusion that entanglement entropy does not exist. So what it means is that there are some questions in quantum field theory that do not have a for example, you can ask, what is the number of degrees of freedom in a region? Doesn't have any, in the continuum limit, doesn't have any answer to that, and it's natural. Well, the entanglement entropy is divergent. It's some number that is infinity. So we need to do this to understand the structure as you go to the continuum limit, and then to extract from here some information that I will come back to that will be well defined and can be computed using entanglement entropy. If you use another regulator, you get a different number, right? Different number. You will change this number. What I have to say is that, for example, it's possible. I have written this angle like this, but you can all try to think on things like this with CASP, with many other structure on the boundary, and it will modify. For example, the powers. It could be that there are different powers, not integer powers. Holographically, you can have non-integer powers, for example, putting some masses or some coupling constants to the theory. So, but the important thing to realize here is that the whole divergent piece is local and is local on the boundary and is extensive on the boundary. Because naturally, if you have some ultraviolet entanglement, you can add along the boundary. So in general, it's some integral, or in these cases that are the feature is a point, is some sums of something, some terms on the boundary. This will be very important in order to understand what is the universal pieces. So again, then the divergent pieces are there, but are local and extensive on the boundary of the region. This term, in general, looks like an area divided by epsilon divided d minus 2. So it's called the area law. The area law of the entanglement. Of course, this looks like the formula of black holes, and this was the original motivation. The original motivation to study entanglement entropy is that it's also growing like the area. But in quantum field theory, but this needs gravity in an essential way. There is chi there. In order to have something like this, you have to put the cutoff to the Planck scale. But from the point of view of quantum field theory, you cannot renormalize this. You don't have the Newton constant to normalize this. But people think that in a gravity theory, these divergences will be absorbed in the Newton's constant. But the way it's interesting that gravity will make entanglement entropy finite and well defined, but still we don't understand how it does that. Then from what I've been saying here, it seems that the only thing that is universal is this logarithmic coefficient, but it's not the case. There is a lot of information, universal information, that is contained in this constant term. But you have to be careful in order to understand how to eliminate the ambiguities in this quantity. What will be contained here? For example, the thermal entropy. The thermal entropy that grows like T to the d minus 1, this is the temperature times volume, so it's not area law, it's volume law. But it's a finite number. There is no cutoff here. This thermal entropy will be contained in this finite piece. And that people have worked many different things. And for example, for a fermionic system with a Fermi surface, you will have something like this. This is the Fermi momentum, the size of the region to the d minus 2. So it's like an area law, but it's corrected with a logarithmic term. So it's growing more than area. And there are many other things. And one would ask how to obtain the universal information here. And a natural way, there are like two ways to obtain universal information and eliminate this. One is using the fact that this piece that we don't want is extensive on the boundary. And the other is using the fact that if you change the state, for example, you consider vacuum another state, this piece that is ultraviolet will always be dependent on the physics at very high energy that will not be modified by the state. So this will be always the same. And you can subtract entropies of different states. And this I will come back to later on this possibility. But now let me concentrate on eliminating divergences by comparing different regions. Suppose you have something like this, and then you have something like this, and then you would like to, this is A and this is B, you could put something like A, entropy of A plus entropy of B minus entropy of A union B minus entropy of A intersection B. And this will cancel the area terms because the perimeter will be the same in this part and in this part. But there are new divergences coming from in the intersection and the union that coming from the logarithmic terms there. So this is not enough to kill the divergences, but you can do something else just considering regions that are non-intersecting. In this case, in order to cancel the divergences, you can compute the mutual information of A and B, that is entropy of A plus entropy of B minus entropy of A union B. And as the divergent pieces are local and extensive, they will appear here, and in the union in the same way. So this will cancel the divergences, and we expect this quantity is universal for any two regions that are separated in any quantum field theory will give you something that depends on the continuum limit. And we can see an example of this. Can we change back to? Okay, thank you. So this is a calculation in the lattice, again, a square lattice. But now you take a circle. So you are making a very bad choice of lattice to compute the entropy of a circle. But still, if you have some universal quantity, it must be the case that you can also obtain it in this case. So if you compute the entropy of a circle, you again obtain some linearly increasing entropy, but with a lot of noise. And you can subtract the linear part, and you get something like this. So if you expected that the entropy was linearly increasing plus some constant, and that this constant has some universal information, it's very difficult to extract here. You cannot extract here because this quantity is not converging to anything. But with a mutual information, if you take two circles, for example, and then dilatate the shape of these two circles and the distance between them at the same time, you will this is what you get. This is a mutual information. It will have a lot of noise, but then it will converge to a fixed number in the continuum limit. Coming back to the question that I was asked before, what is the entropy in a region, then in the continuum limit itself doesn't have a good answer in quantum field theory. Maybe in gravity, yes, but this quantity, this mutual information, does have a good answer and is always universal.
Sorry,
what was capital R? Sorry? Here, this R? This R is the size. Here, this one. This R is, I'm taking here some specific shape where this side is equal to the separation distance, is equal to this side, this radius, and all of them are R.
Oh, okay, just make it bigger so there's more.
Yeah. If you change the. Yeah, but if you. And then you dilatate all of them, all together, the three numbers. If you take different ratios of distance here, you will get something different, right? This one. No, what in two dimensions, you say, for example, in that case, you will get the same logarithmic piece here that is the only divergence with epsilon. You will get the same number. So in that sense, it's... Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because this is very ultraviolet, and then the thermal thing is highly suppressed for high energy. Infinite? No, well, but no, sure, no, yeah. But in some sense, in the quantum field theory, this state does not belong to the Hilbert space. So, the causal diamond, yeah.
It's the domain of dependence of the causal diamond.
Yeah.
And the regularization that he and his student Yasti is here at PI, that they've been using is to discretize this space-time region in a random way. So using a sampling of the space-time point. And they've been getting results
which are looking good for a one-dimensional. Yeah, but I think it's a different regularization, but I can also do that kind of things here, and the result is the same. So what they are doing, because they are doing that because they need it, because they don't have a Cauchy surface where you put all the operators. So all the operators comes in the diamond, so they need to do these things that have a, but here, if I add the operators that they are in the causal diamond, I get exactly the same result, because the algebra is not changed. I put more operators, the algebra will be the same.
right? So the entropy will be the same, again, divergent.
But the point is maybe your discretization.
Yeah, the discretization in that case is different. If the thing that, that they are computing tends in the limit, for example, to a quantum field, I don't think they can get something that is universal directly. They have to select some pieces of the entropy in order to be. So there is no way that in the continuum limit a region can have an entropy that is well defined. This is known because these algebras are of a special type that cannot have a finite entropy, let's say. Yeah.
But isn't the issue that you can avoid this rotational dependence? You have this rotational dependence
because no, but you can use other regularization that do not have this problem with rotations, but are also like that are choices. You have to have something that is independent of choice. You end up calculating this thing, but there is a way to. So in the finite case, so in the lattice, just you can compute something that is finite, so there is no problem with doing this. But in the infinite dimensional case, in the continuum, there are some formulas called Araki formulas that are difficult to handle, but it will give you a relative entropy, some cousin of this, directly in the continuum. So the relative entropy quantities are well defined in the continuum itself, while the entropy is not. This is the message. Okay. What's the time? What? I have 20 minutes. Okay. okay. Well, then you can let me remind of some of the properties of mutual information that are like related, very much related to this property that is always universal. So mutual information, because of is positive, is always positive. And you have that because of strong subadditivity. That in this case we are talking about has this particular geometrical picture, so that you have these things in geometrical form, and you have this inequality. This inequality is a strong subadditivity and implies that the mutual information always grows with the size of one of the regions, for example. If I take some bigger region, it will grow. So it's monotonically increasing. It's monotonically increasing while the entropy is not. The entropy is not monotonically increasing because it's a quantum entropy. In the classical case, the entropy is monotonic with size.
but not in the quantum case. So it's important that there is entanglement. And you can see that the area term itself, the most important piece of the entropy, is not monotonic because you have, for example, you have a region like this, and you have some smaller region, you can put something like this with a lot of area that will have much bigger entropy. And this is the reason why this entropy is not having a good defined, well-defined continuum limit, because when you do the continuum limit, these wiggles will go to the same place as this. So you will if you are wiggling in the size of the cutoff, you could not in the continuum limit differentiate between these two geometries while the entropies are very different. While in the mutual information, if you do that, for example, you do this is A and this is B, then the mutual information is growing, so this will be the pure circle will be bigger than this wiggle set, and the mutual information will be smaller for this other smaller circle. So when you take the continuum limit, these two things will come to the same like circle, they say. So this wiggle set will have the same entropy because it's in the same mutual information because it's in between these two prescriptions, they say. So this monotonicity property is behind the fact that it has a good continuum limit. Let me show another picture. So this is another thing that you can obtain from mutual information. Mutual information, what is a picture? If you have some region and you have another region that is very nearby, now we are in the continuum because we can think in the continuum directly in mutual information. When these are very, this distance is very small, this epsilon is a macroscopic distance but very small, this mutual information will tend to diverge, so somehow reproducing the behavior of the entropy. So typically, the mutual information in this case, because of units, of dimensions, will go like the size of this, the perimeter of this size, divided by epsilon in this 2+1 dimensional case with some coefficient. So it will diverge with this macroscopic size going to zero. While if you have two regions that are very far apart, mutual information will go to zero, but it will go to zero with some power law in general, or depends on the theory, but it will measure the correlator between A and B that falls down the slowest in falling down. This was proved by Cardi. And then I'm showing here some particular pictures you can do, for example, comparing in two dimensions a massless scalar and a Maxwell field. Where is this? Oh, I don't have the pointer. Well, the upper curve is for the scalar, and you see that this is a logarithmic scale. In both cases, the mutual information diverges linearly. Sorry? Oh. Yeah. So they will diverge in the same way here for when this distance is small compared to the size of the square. And they will go to zero, this mutual information, with different powers. In one case, this power is dominated by the scalar field correlator. And while in the other case, it's dominated by the correlator of F mu nu. squared. So it means that, for example, you can extract this power of the lowest dimensional operator from the mutual information. So there is a lot of information there that you can extract. Okay. Well, then let me begin with a replica trick. I don't know if I can go very far with this in the time that I have, but. This thing, if you have a in the conformal case, will be something like that. In the massive case, it's also the same. Yeah, you have a for example, you have a massive free field, it will exponentially decay with this correlator. The lesson is that the leading contribution will be the correlator related to the correlator that falls down more slowly, right? And this is very much related to the fact that mutual information is an upper bound of correlation functions. So this is a connected correlators square divided by the norms of these operators. You have this inequality, and somehow it looks like for large distances, you are not like saturating, but it has the same power as this type of correlation. Yeah, you have to do some tricks in order. So you cannot put here a field operator because you need a bounded operator, some operator that have a finite norm. But you can put, for example, some exponentials of the field or some like a spectral decomposition of the field, smear of the field, and then you can play the game with this. Somebody knows that. I don't know. But it would be nice to have an inequality here. But I think nobody has come with something that is upper bounding mutual information or something useful there. I don't know if people in quantum information know. Because, you know, I want to, for example, to have a bound on how this diverges, and then I would like to have something here, but it's not, no. Okay, let me then begin with the replica trick. So now we have computed in some particular case, or free case, in some lattice regularization, let's say the entanglement entropy, but we want to have a method that can be applied more generally and that uses continuum quantum field theory. And this is given by the replica method. The interesting fact of this replica method is that it will give us a handle on relating in entropy with geometry, with something very geometrical, and that is in fact related to the fact of the holographic entanglement entropy has a geometrical expression in ADS-CFT. The idea is then not to compute directly the entropy, but rather to focus on these other quantities called Rényi entropies. That are also coming from the density matrix. But the only thing that you don't need to compute the trace of rho log rho, but instead of you have to compute the trace of powers of the density matrix, and this has a lot of many simplifications. These Rényi entropies look like very similar to the entropy in the sense that they are interesting quantities by themselves, and they look like, for example, this expansion of the divergent pieces, all that is similar to the case of the entropy. And in fact, the reason one is interested in this is that in the limit n equal to n tending to 1, this goes to the von Neumann entropy. This is the reason we have put here this factor 1 minus n, because this Rényi entropy, in fact, the piece that you have to compute is just this trace. The other thing is just a logarithm and some factor. But this 1 minus n will give you this limit of the entropy. So in order to compute this, we will use the path integral formulation of quantum mechanics. And then let me begin with some formula that is the main result of the path integral that you have, for example, in ordinary quantum mechanics. If you have, for example, this amplitude, this transition amplitude of having coordinate x0 at time t0 to having coordinate x at time 0, this is given by the path integral over all trajectories, exponential of the action, between these two points here. This is the expression of the path integral of the transition amplitude. And this you can also write as x0 with some evolution operator, x. So now you put these things at the same time, and then this give you you start with x0, then put the evolution operator, and do the bracket with x. Now, the idea is to obtain the wave function of the fundamental state using this expression in terms of something that comes from the path integral. Because I want to compute the entanglement entropy of the fundamental state, and I want to compute it using the path integral. So in order to do that, there is a well-known trick that is to put this t0 there, to put it in imaginary time. So we write t0 equal to the I tau, where tau is a real number. And then we will take the limit tau going to infinity. Why is that? Because if you look at this expression here, if you put t0 imaginary, then it will give you some real and negative factor here. And when you put this to the limit that tau goes to infinity, this will select. So in this case, this will be some x0 e to the minus . So you can decompose this exponential using an eigenvector decomposition of the Hamiltonian, and you see that when you have put here minus h tau now, because you have put imaginary time, then the only thing that survives in the limit is the lowest value of the eigenvector, or the eigenvalues of H. Otherwise, all the others are suppressed more exponentially. So this will tend to something like this. If your x0 is fixed and you vary your x, let's say, this will be proportional to the wave function of the vacuum state. So this is some factor that you can forget about in the limit of tau going to infinity. And so you get something proportional to the wave function of the vacuum state. So you have phi 0 x is equal to the integral now in Euclidean time of minus infinity x and 0 minus the Euclidean action of x. And this is in quantum mechanics. Quantum field theory is just a particular case of quantum mechanics. You can directly write the wave function of the vacuum state in the quantum field theory using this expression. So now this was the coordinate variable. Now we have a field at a time equal to 0, and this will be the variable in which the wave function is expressed. So you would have a wave functional now, a wave functional that depends on this field that is just the coordinate where this wave function is compute at time equal to 0. Will be some factor, some normalization factor, let's say. Times the integral in the Euclidean time to minus infinity to time equal to 0, where your field has as boundary condition. So now we are doing the path integral in the full half space for negative Euclidean time, and we are fixing the value of the field along the time equal to 0 line to be phi 1 of x. Just a numerical function, there. And this number is just the entry on this functional. And then you have here that you have to integrate over all trajectories here up to minus infinity. And then you have phi, when t is equal to 0, and at the point x, this thing is phi 1x. This is nice because it gives you a path integral expression of the wave functional of the vacuum, of the vacuum state. Now you can construct the vacuum density matrix simply as rho zero. Now it depends on two field variables. And it's a pure state, so it's phi zero conjugate. Phi 1, and this you can picture this as now two copies of this path integral, one for time less than 0 in Euclidean space, and one for time greater than 0, where your boundary conditions of this path integral here are phi 1 here and phi 2 here. So it's just you duplicate. Doing the integral in the upper half plane will conjugate your wave function. Fine. Now, in order to compute these Renyi entropies, we have to first compute the reduced density matrix to a region. And for that, we have to trace over the degrees of freedom outside some region. So now we take, again, this thing. and think now that we have some region V, and we have the path integral here, and the path integral here. And then we want to trace over the this region outside V. And the trace means that you have to impose that the field here is equal to the field here and integrate over it. It's like the trace of matrices. You have to put the indices equal and sum over it. Here, the index is the field itself. So so you can think, let me put a little bit more clear this. You can think your fields in this line of time equal to zero, you decompose phi 1 is equal to phi 1 in B plus phi 1 in B complement, and phi 2 is equal to phi 2 in B plus phi 2 in B complement. This is this situation. But now I'm putting these two things equal. So I'm writing phi 1 in B complement is equal to phi 2 in B complement. And once you do that, you have also to integrate over this. When you do that, you are integrating over the field in all this half plane and all this half plane. And now you just integrate over the field here where the boundary condition is the same for both. So this will erase the cut here. So what you get is a path integral. Let me write it like this. This is a full Euclidean space, and this is the region V where we have a cut. This here you don't have anything anymore. So you have to do the path integral over the full space with these two cuts where you impose boundary conditions. Here you put phi 2B, phi 1D. So the density matrix in V will be a functional of these two fields, phi 2 in B, or phi 1 in B, phi 2 in B, and will be just the path integral everywhere with boundary conditions on the cuts. Let me call it V minus phi on V minus coming from below is equal to phi 1, and phi on B plus is equal to phi 2 B. Okay? So this is nice. We have expression. Perhaps it's difficult to compute in some cases, but it's nice that we have expression in terms of a path integral or of the reduced density matrix of the vacuum state of any quantum field theory. Time? Sorry? It's already? Ah, OK. OK, well, I arrived to the density matrix. Tomorrow we will see how it goes.